Thank you, Sai Prakash. Thank you, Prem. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantanilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say, and the month of June is on in this Divine Hamlet. The refreshing June. That's how I would like to call it, because it is during this time of the year that you see new faces, eager hearts, young minds who have joined Baba schools and colleges. The Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School and the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And just a couple of days ago, today is June 19th, on the last Sunday, June 15th, concluded a 3-day summer course on Indian culture and spirituality for the students of all the campuses of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And it is really interesting why Swami always had the summer course before the academic session in the colleges started. And if we ponder on this, what comes to me is, during the summer course, what happens is that students are educated about what is the true goal of education before the academic, secular education begins. In fact, during the formative years of the university, Swami once had said, "This university will not be imparting in its botany department merely a knowledge of trees in nature. We will spread the knowledge of the tree of true living. This university will not be imparting the knowledge of merely economics. The knowledge of theistic ethics too will be included. This university will teach not only the science of the material world, it will also teach the science of Raso Vaisaha, the supreme embodiment of nectar sweetness, the Atma. This university will teach not only the science of the material world, Padartha, it will also teach the science of the non-material world, Parartha. It will not differentiate the material from the non-material, or treat the non-material as irrelevant to the material." So on, Bhagwan goes elaborating on the purpose of the university, and then Swami says, "We have decided that this shall be the uniqueness of this university. This will not be like other universities which adopt a few faculties and burden their alumni with degrees which they can present as begging bowls clamoring for jobs. This university will confer on its alumni the courage and confidence, the knowledge and skill to shape their careers by their own efforts, standing on their legs and relying on their strength." And Bhagwan finally says, "So we have proposed that spiritual education be integrated harmoniously with the teaching of ethical, physical and metaphysical subjects in this university." So yes, here you have the blend of spiritual and ethical, physical and metaphysical. But the education begins with spiritual. And that is what summer course is all about. And interestingly, the festival calendar for the students also begins with the celebration of Guru Purnima. And on this occasion, every year, quite in the beginning of the launch of their learning process in the university, Swami makes it clear to them who exactly is that true preceptor, what exactly they should be learning, what is the learning that should happen. When can we truly say a person has really learned what indeed has to be learned? All these things are made clear right in the beginning. Summer course happens, then Guru Purnima happens. On one occasion, a student who had the opportunity to serve Swami at very close quarters, he asked, "Swami, what is the best relationship we can have with you?" This happened sometime in the year 2007. And those of us who have been touched by Bhagwan's love, those of us who adore and extol him in many ways, we wonder, what is the best relationship that we can have with Bhagwan? Because sometimes he is for us the best friend with whom we can share a camaraderie that allows us to open up to him with anything. without ever worrying that he will leave our side. And for sometimes he is for us the most comforting father who has a solution for each one of our problems, who never shies away from reprimanding us if we have transgressed any dotted line. For others, it is the most loving mother, and there are those for whom Swami is simple and plain. He is just their guru. But you know, our relationship with Bhagwan is not really written in stone. We behave differently at different times. So this boy who was actually leaving the university that year, he asked Swami, "What is the best relationship can I have with you?" Because he also had all those different kind of relationship, as he had experience of Bhagwan as an extremely doting mother. Bhagwan had corrected him like a disciplinarian father. Bhagwan had loved him like a most dear friend. So he was thinking, which is the one relationship that I should carry in my heart? How can I connect with Swami permanently? How can I strengthen this bond with him wherever I may go? And that day, when he asked this question, Bhagwan looked deep into his eyes, paused, and then in a calm but assertive tone, Swami said, "If you want my relationship with you to be permanent, then regard me as your guru. Take me as your revered master and be a steadfast pupil. Then this bond will last not for a lifetime, but for lifetimes together. This bond will last not for a lifetime, but for lifetimes together. If we regard Bhagwan as our guru, as our Satguru. And if we think about it deeply, this is not an ordinary revelation. Swami is not just a mother who will always cover us with love, or a friend who will simply stand by us irrespective of what we do, or a father who is constantly engaged in providing for us. He is all this, yes. He is all these in more ways than one, but that only partially explains our relationship with him. What he truly is for all of us is this. He is our Master Supreme. He is our Sadguru. Just like an outstanding teacher, he is concerned only about one thing, his pupil's progress. And towards this end, he will do anything. He will suffer any amount of pain. He will take in any measure of ignominy. It doesn't matter if he becomes unpopular or even if his pupil begins to hate him. It doesn't matter. But he will go out of his way any number of times and do everything that is good for his pupil's progress. If it comes to that, he will change all his plans without batting an eyelid. He will also smilingly welcome and endure unimaginable hardships if need be, if that is the best way to teach his pupils a tough lesson. That is what the Sadguru does. And why does he do all this? Simple. Selfless love for his wards. If there is one characteristic that shines magnificently in a Sadguru, it is this. It is his absolute selflessness. He exists solely for his wards' welfare and nothing else. To this Supreme Sadguru, let us pay our homage.
కల్పాత్మరూపం విభుం విశ్వనాథం తమద్వైతత్వం బలం యశరీరే త్రిణేశాపి వృక్షే పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం. చిరం దేహనాథం శమాశాంతి సింధుం గణేశం స్థితం సర్వజీవేమికాణం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం. సదాకార వ్యక్తం సుమార్గేషనేతుం నరాణామృతం సదా పావనం శాంతి ప్రేమ స్వరూపం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం. ఆచారూపం భవం వేదసారం పురాణే తు వంద్యం సదీవే ప్రమాణం గురుత్వం గురునా కవిత్వం కవీనా పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం.
సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం. వి హేల్ భగవాన్ అవర్ స్వామి సత్యసాయి సాయినాథ్ యాజ్ ది సద్గురు. బట్ హూ ఎగ్జాక్ట్లీ ఈజ్ ఎ సద్గురు? వాట్ ఆర్ ది అట్రిబ్యూట్స్ ఆఫ్ ఎ సద్గురు? వాట్ క్వాలిఫైస్ వన్ టు బి ఎ సద్గురు? హౌ డు వి రికగ్నైజ్ ద సద్గురు? And how do we understand all this in the context of the Satya Sai avatar, the only avatar that we had the opportunity to physically see, hear, witness, touch and talk to? Well, we can understand only from what we have seen and experienced through this beautiful form of Satya Sai, and that is what we will do today, and that is what we will begin to discuss with another brother from the university, a former student of Bhagwan's college, Brother Sai Giridhar, today in this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune to Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:55, and as I just mentioned, today we will dwell on Satguru, the principle of the Sadguru, the preceptor, unparalleled. And as I told you, with me in the studio now is Brother Sai Giridhar. He's pursuing his research, his PhD in the university, in the Department of Chemistry. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us in the studio for this program when we discuss Bhagwan as our guru. And you are the one who is in the university that has Bhagwan as a founding chancellor, and he's so much more than that. And you have had the chance to experience this aspect of Bhagwan physically, personally, as well as on a continuing basis even now. So how does it feel being part of this program?
Sir Ambushu, at the very outset, thank you for this opportunity. It's always a pleasure to be here. And as you rightly said, it is a very unique blessing to have the Lord of the Universe also to be the Chancellor of your university.
Yes.
It is a very, very unique blessing. As you were just mentioning sometime back, the most important and beautiful relationship that one can have with Bhagwan is that of a disciple with Sadguru. As you rightly mentioned, the experience of the student, where Swami clearly said that the best relationship that we can have is that of Guru and Sishya, or a master and a disciple. This kind of takes me back into those stories which Swami used to narrate, mm-hmm. as to how a disciple should be with his Sadguru. I'm reminded of the story of King Janaka.
Mm-hmm.
Swami used to tell this story. Of course, there are many versions of this available in literature, but the essence is what is more important. The story goes something like this, as far as my memory goes, is that King Janaka once went to the ashram of Yajnavalkya, who is his guru. His guru was very, very dear to him, and he was very dear to his guru. Just as many devotees and students of Bhagwan have experienced that nearness and dearness, I think that's an indelible part of the relationship between the guru and the disciple, because a guru always sees himself in his disciple.
Correct.
He waits for that moment after all the chiseling. You know, Swami says when a sculptor chisels a rock, what he's actually doing is, suppose he wants to chisel it into a form of Lord Krishna, he's actually chiseling out those parts which is not Krishna.
Correct.
In the rock. In the same way, Sadguru also chisels his disciple. He already sees him as himself.
Just like the sculptor has already seen the Krishna.
Yes, exactly. A sculptor kind of visualizes Krishna in the rock already, and he's simply knocking off those portions which is not Krishna.
Which is not Krishna, yes.
In the same way, the Sadguru also sees himself in his disciple already.
Beautiful.
He simply kind of chisels off those portions which is not
a hammer here, a bend there.
Yeah, a bend there, a knock here, you know,
yes.
And all that. And with love as the fundamental basis.
Correct.
I'm reminded of an incident with one of the former wardens of the Vrindavan campus was sharing with me when he took up as the role of being a warden of the Vrindavan campus. He was confronted with, you know, many challenges. So many new students come from different kind of backgrounds, hoping to change after coming here. Sometimes it is the parents who hope that their children will get transformed. So they send their children here, though they might not be very sure, they were quite comfortable with the city lifestyle and all that.
Yes.
So the warden of the hostel, as you rightly said, this is the time when new students come. The greatest challenge is faced by the hostel teachers, because here are new set of students, and they're all beautiful flowers, and it is our responsibility to kind of provide the fencing for them.
Yes.
Nourish them, nurture them. It's a beautiful responsibility, but a very difficult one though.
They need to blossom.
Yeah, they need to blossom. They need to understand the value of what they are getting as well. It's a great challenge. So this warden was also having this challenge, and there was one particular student who was simply getting under his nerve, in the sense that whatever he tried to the best of his ability with all his love and care, this student would not budge. And he was very adamant on his own ways. So he had no other choice but to take this case up to Swami, having put all his efforts. So then when he went up to Swami, Swami said, deal with him very strictly. Then this warden was actually little taken aback. He said, Swami, I cannot be too harsh on the student, or too strict rather, on the student, because I love him.
Oh, the warden said.
The warden said, because I love students, Swami. I cannot, you know, shout at them or, you know, take them to task because I love them. Swami said, I am asking you to take them to task because you love them. If you don't love them, you have no right to correct them.
Correct.
Because then it becomes an ego affair that, you know, you're not listening to me, so I am correcting you. Swami said, unless you have love for your students.
Since you have the love, you have all the right.
Yes, you have the right to correct the student. And the other thing which Swami mentioned was, see, if you are overly compassionate to the student, you know, in your exuberance of loving them, they'll get attached to you. Then I have to be strict. Now you decide whether student should get attached to you or to me.
Wow.
And then he said, if they get attached to you, it is bondage. But if they get attached to me, it is liberation.
Liberation. Wow.
This is the beautiful message which Swami gave.
Phenomenal.
But at the same time, Swami brought out this most powerful message that the relationship, the foundation of the relationship between a teacher and a student, or a one step higher, the Sadguru and the disciple, should be that of absolute love. Now, coming back to the story of Janaka, where we started off, there was this beautiful love between this grand master and this grand student,
yes,
who was Janaka. And many disciples in the ashram were very jealous of this disciple, who was a king, by the way, emperor of that nation.
Yes, Mithila.
Of Mithila. And means whose capital was Mithila.
Yes.
So the master wanted to teach a lesson to all the disciples. So what he decided is, he decided to invite his student, that is King Janaka, to his ashram. And when he arrived, through his own yoga maya, that is his tremendous power of illusion,
yes,
he created a scenario. The scenario was, the entire Mithila, especially the king's palace,
yes,
was in flames.
Flames. Oh, I remember this.
You remember this?
Yes. Swami actually, he comes late.
Yes.
He comes late and all the disciples are actually sort of upset with the master that the master is not starting the class and waiting for King Janaka to
come. Yes. And once King Janaka comes and sits, you know, Janaka actually asks him that he wants the highest knowledge, that is Brahma Vidya. The master says, but for that you have to give some kind of dakshina. You know, this is a little background to the story.
Yes.
Not exactly at that moment. It has happened slightly before. Then what happens is, Yajnavalka says, the Guru Dakshina that I want from my disciple is, I want you to give your mind to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So King Janaka says, Master, I have given it to you. Look at his intense yearning for what he wanted, that is the Brahma Vidya, from the Sadguru. Moment Sadguru, in the form of Yajnavalka, told him that, I want your mind, surrender your mind to me, instantly the king said, I have given it. And to test it, these wonderful incidents were happening. It so happened that Mithila was in flames, and the ashram was also on flames. So the scenario was, in the ashram, all the disciples were running helter-skelter to preserve whatever small possessions they had. What will they have in the ashram?
Yes.
Maybe a few set of dhotis and angavastrams, yes, the kamandalus and, you yes know, all their small necessities. They were trying to save them and preserve them and, you know, get
them
away.
Them.
Yeah, put them in safety. And here the city of Mithila was in flames. So the soldiers came running, the ministers came running. They were all pleading with the king to come and do something. But he simply sat still. He did not move from there. Then the prime minister came and pleaded. He still did not move. Then the queens also from Mithila came and said, our lord, what has happened to you? Your palace is in flames. Why don't you get up and do something about it? And Janaka did not respond. So they knew that something is wrong. And they went straight to Yajnavalkya. And told the sage, what have you done to our king? He is not responding and everything is in flames. He said, who said so? Let me come and see. So he goes to Janaka and says, Janaka, get up. And Janaka gets up immediately.
Okay.
He says, your queen has come, your minister has come, they are all calling you, they are saying your city is in flames. Why have you not responded? He said, Master, I have given my mind to you. You have not asked me to respond, so how can I respond?
Wow.
Through this experience, which was actually an illusory creation of the Master, he then removed the illusion, called all the disciples and said, look at the greatness of this disciple of mine. If you ask why I spend so much time with him, the answer is, because he has given his mind entirely to me. And that kind of an implicit obedience of the disciple is the highest virtue that is dearest to Sadhguru. Implicit obedience to the Master's words.
Wow. And I think we have seen that with Bhagwan any number of instances where you follow his words to the T and you are protected, you are saved, you are blessed.
Absolutely.
Amazing. In fact, Giridhar, when this thought came that we should do some contemplation on this principle of Sadguru, I was thinking how to go about it. And just like we do when we need guidance, we open Satya Sai Speaks. So that's what I did.
Yeah, that's our ultimate refuge.
Yes. So I randomly opened Satya Sai Speaks just 2 days ago. And I wanted to cast my eyes on the first Guru Purnima discourse. And what came was the Guru Purnima discourse that Swami had delivered in 1985. And guess what? In that discourse, Swami is explaining exactly this, what I wanted. Swami is telling what are the characteristics and attributes of a Sadguru.
Wonderful.
And Swami is doing it through that profound and famous Sanskrit hymn, Brahmanandam.
Oh, what a beautiful, how Swami used to sing that hymn.
Yes. So, I mean, really that discourse was an eye-opener, and I really thank Bhagwan that, you know, my eyes fell on that. And I just thought, if you agree, we could just dwell on that mantram.
Absolutely.
And what Bhagwan has mentioned in that discourse.
Yes.
And that way probably we'll be able to get at least a glimpse of who a true Sadguru is. I think for us it just becomes only slightly little easier because we have seen a Sadguru. Something we can understand, something we can relate to. Otherwise I think these are very, very esoteric concepts. I don't know if we can ever fathom these
even
things.
Having seen him, I think it's important for us to right now simply pray to Swami from the bottom of our heart that Swami, you speak through us, you think through us, you act through us. There is no way that this mind can comprehend, you know, his ways.
Yes. Amazing. So let's begin by listening to this beautiful Sanskrit hymn. This was rendered by a very prominent, eminent singer, Purnima Bhatt Kulkarni, in
wonderful.
Front of Bhagwan.
Wonderful.
Trigunarahitam Sadgurum tam namami. Sadgurum tam namami.
Wasn't that beautiful?
Excellent.
So, in this discourse, Giridhar, Swami is saying that the Guru is the embodiment of the bliss of Brahma. Because he is merged in this Ananda. The Guru is merged in this Ananda, which is Brahma.
In fact, he is the Ananda.
He is the Ananda. Brahman. Yes. Then Swami says, this Ananda, it is not imported or acquired or attained. It is inherent in every heart. And then further Swami says, the world, the cosmos, every particle is Ananda itself. But being ever in it, with it, of it, and for it, man is unable to be it.
Absolutely.
That is so amazing.
That is the greatest wonder, isn't it?
Yes.
Means if you ask anybody, is I've had these experiences, means I've paid attention to this more recently, and I would ask our students in awareness classes or, you know, in general conversations, when they would say, how do I connect to God, you know, or how do I connect to Swami now? My question has always been straightforward and single. That is, where is God? And invariably everybody would say, God is everywhere. Isn't it the paradox that, you know, you somehow know, at least you have the information, that God is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yet you
say I have to connect.
Yeah, yet you say I have to connect. So I always go back to this question that if God is everywhere, how are you and me exclusive of God then? Isn't it? Means, am I a unique aspect besides God or something like that? Yet this doesn't sink into us, you know, very deeply, and, you know, which could be a subject of discussion altogether.
Yeah.
But one interesting observation, a beautiful message which one very senior devotee gave me recently is valuable in this context of what you said. You know, God pervades it, Ananda pervades everything.
Everything.
You know, yet man is unable to experience
it.
And this senior devotee gave a beautiful guideline. He said, see, fundamentally, Swami always says that faith is what can give you that experience.
Yes.
And he gave a beautiful message. He said, if you have firm faith that Swami is God, or Sadguru, Swami is Sadguru, who is God, who is Brahmananda Swarupa. If you have firm faith in that, then simply Swami is everywhere, which implies Swami is right now here with me.
Yes.
What a profound thing. Simply to believe firmly that Swami is God.
Yes. I mean, that is the, if we say that we have faith in Swami's divinity, then we should not have even an iota.
Exactly.
Of doubt.
Exactly.
That he is there with us right now here in this moment. In
exactly.
fact, I remember reading the book Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba by Dr. John Hislop, where in the course of that interview that he has with Bhagwan, he says, Swami, I have complete faith in you. No, I trust you completely. You know, there are people who have doubts, and Swami, I don't have any doubts. Swami said, are you sure? And Swami, I mean, you are God for me and I know it for sure. Then Swami says, is it really? He said, yes, Swami, I believe you. And Swami said, if that is the case, after the interview is over, when you return to your hotel in Bangalore, the first thought that comes to you is, okay, now Swami is in Bangalore, in Vrindavan, in the bungalow. Now I can relax. At 3 o'clock, I will again go to Swami. How can you have such a thought?
Absolutely. In a sense, there is another experience of a student. It's quite famous. that Swami asked one student in Trayi, you know, who are you? And the student gave the standard answer, which, you know, all of us are prepared for. Usually Swami asks, where do you come from? And we say, Swami, from you.
Yeah.
I had a very funny experience with Bhagwan regarding this. I was sitting in the darshan lines in the third block, and Swami used to spend, you know, around this 2001 or so, Swami used to spend around 1 hour or 1.5
yes.
hours sitting there or standing and speaking to all the students
yes.
just freely, you know, on various
after the topics. Interviews.
Yeah. Yeah, after the interviews. In one such session, Swami was seated and I was sitting right in front of him. And Swami asked me, where do you come from? I said, Swami, from you. Swami said, hey, where do you come from? You know, I said, Swami, from you. And Swami was really annoyed. And Swami said, ekkadi nunchi vachavu, he said.
Mm-hmm.
In Telugu.
Yes.
Okay, more pointing towards the place from which you come from.
Yes.
So again I said, Swami, from you. Then he decided, I have to ask the most specific question. So he said, Euru, he said.
Okay.
That is, which city? So at the time we were residing at Hyderabad. I said, Swami, from Hyderabad. Swami said, Abba, idi cheppochu kada. What can be told in such simple way? Why are you touching your nose roundabout? You know, he pulled his hand around his head.
Oh my God.
You know, and said, instead of pointing to your nose straight forward, why do you point to your nose roundabout? Idanta Einstein buddhi, Swami said.
Oh, oh my God.
But the point is, we say many words.
Correct.
How much do we actually believe in them?
Believe in that.
Is a very big question. And one such student had this similar experience where Swami asked him, who are you? And he said, Swami, I am God.
Yes.
And Swami said, oh really, are you sure? Yes, Swami, I am God. Then Swami said, okay, today I will sit here, you go and give darshan. And he was stunned, he was started shivering. And then Swami said, see, it is not just about saying.
Correct.
It is good to remind yourself,
yes.
but one has to develop conviction
yes.
in these very words that we believe in.
Yes. Amazing. So, that is the proof of faith. How much do we really believe? You know, just
yeah.
saying I love Swami or saying I have faith in Swami is one thing, but really having faith in Swami, it calls for something absolutely
yeah.
much, much greater understanding,
very
and
true.
Greater yeah. awareness and greater conviction. So here, now as we were discussing, now we are in this ananda, as you mentioned, but we are not able to experience because you mentioned we don't have that faith.
Absolute faith.
We don't have yes. that absolute faith. And why is it that we do not have this absolute faith? Probably because, as Swami is telling, on account of darkness, on account of ignorance.
Ignorance, yes.
There's something that is misleading us, that is deluding us. And of course, in this discourse, Swami goes on to give a measure of what Brahmananda is.
Oh yeah, that's a beautiful thing which Swami says. It's also there in the Vedas.
Yes, yeah, Swami refers to Taittiriya Upanishad.
Yes.
And Swami says that the Taittiriya Upanishad assumes the height of human ananda as a unit of measurement.
Oh.
As a one unit of estimation of what's ananda,
uh-huh.
Brahmananda, how to measure Brahmananda. Swami says you start with Manushyananda, Manushya ananda, which is the one unit of estimation. And what
basic,
is...
Basic level. Of
basic ananda. Level, yeah. So Swami says, what is Manushya ananda? A person who has all the wealth, all the renown, all the learning that can be gained, he has perfect health, he has perpetual youth, he's almost like the king of the world. Everything that he had ever wanted, ever wished, you know, his heart longed for, he has got it.
That is Manushyananda.
That is
the basic level.
Basic level.
Oh my God. I don't think there is any single individual who is like this.
Correct. Absolutely. So Swami is telling that is Manushyananda. Now, you know, it becomes really interesting. Swami says, 100 times this of Manushyananda is Gandharvananda.
Uh-huh.
Means of the celestial singers,
uh-huh.
the bliss that they experience. And then he says, 100 times of Gandharvananda is Pitrananda. That is the ananda of departed souls.
Departed means.
Means, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 100 of Pitrananda is Devananda.
That is the devas.
Yes, yeah. of the gods, yeah. the bliss experienced by the gods. And it goes on. 100 times Devananda is Indrananda. 100 times Indrananda is Brihaspati Ananda, who is the
guru of
Indra.
Of the devas. Yeah.
Deva. And 100 times Brihaspati Ananda is Prajapati Ananda.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't end there. 100 times Prajapati Ananda is Hiranyagarbha Ananda.
My God.
And that is the ultimate. That is the ultimate Ananda.
And 100 times of Hiranyagarbhananda is Brahmananda.
So, in this continuum, I mean, it really shows what is Brahmananda. And you know, I don't know if we are, if whatever we are experiencing can be called even Ananda in
this
world.
That's very true. In fact, Swami says that. He gives the example of Nachiketa.
Yes.
He narrates the story of Nachiketa and exactly elucidates this point. Swami says that, you know, there is Nachiketa's father was, whose other name was also Gautama, if I'm not mistaken. Vajashravas was one of his name and the other name is Gautama. He was performing a yajna where he was giving away cows to Brahmins.
Correct.
And as part of the yajna, he was giving cows which would neither eat well nor yield good milk. So his son, who was a very, you know, a small boy, a boy of tender age, he knew some amount of dharma which he has learned from his preceptors and from his own parents in words. You know, they have conveyed the words to him, but they're showing some other actions here. So I'm reminded of Swami's, you know, the story.
Chepinetto
Chestara, you know.
Yes.
It's got full of such anecdotes where the elders and the teachers tell one thing, but their behavior and their actions, you know, is something else.
Yes.
And that really confuses the child.
Correct.
You know, which one should I follow? What I see or what I heard from them?
Yes.
You know, this was a similar predicament for Nachiketa, where he saw that his father has taught him what is dharma, that when you give gifts to others, when it is, you know, especially part of a sacred sacrifice or a yajna, it has to be the best of what you have, not, you know, the worst of or what you do not want.
The discarded thing.
The discarded. For example, Swami also makes fun of some people who go on pilgrimages.
Yes.
And you know, the purpose of pilgrimage is to give up something.
Yes.
And they conveniently say, the end of this pilgrimage, I have given up bitter gourd and brinjal.
Yes.
You know, and that's something which anyway he doesn't like.
Like, yeah.
And he says, I have given that up in, yes, at the end of this pilgrimage. In the same way, even in these sacrifices, more so in such yajnas, one has to give away things which is very good in nature, which is in fact the best.
Yeah, I mean, what is close to your heart?
What is close to your
heart? You give to Lord what is dear to your heart.
Very true.
As sacrifice.
Very, in fact, a very small way in which I love to practice it myself is I love food.
Yes.
And
that shows.
That is very apparent. But then you see that when a particular dish comes, you know, I don't know if everybody experiences this or what, there will be special sections of the dish which will have more amount of things you like. Like say, if you buy a pizza, so there is sections of the pizza with more cheese.
Yes.
At some ends. So you love those portions of the pizza which has got more cheese, say, just for an example.
Yeah.
What I started doing was, you know, trying to practice this principle, the best portion of the meal, I will take and I will serve it to the person next to me.
Oh.
You know, that I started developing as a conscious practice, because that is what Swami says. Means you should give the best that you like to others.
Yes.
You know, and here was Gautama or Vajashravas, who was giving away cows which could hardly yield any milk, which is of no use to the Brahmins. In fact, it will be a burden on them to maintain those cows. So Nachiketa felt that, you know, his father is not going to benefit from this. So he went and tucked at his, you know, dress or something like that. And when Gautama paid attention to him for a few fraction of moments, Nachiketa tells him that, father, what you're doing is not right. You know, who would listen to his son? Say, hey, keep quiet. That was his reaction. Then he says, then Nachiketa contemplates, if there is something which is healthy, hearty and very dear to his father, it is himself. That is Nachiketa. Correct. Himself. So he says, father, whom are you giving me to? The father, in a fit of anger or, you know, of irritation, he just pronounced and said, I'm going to give you to the Lord of Death.
I'm going to give it to Yama.
Yama. So that was just, you know, a reaction to his irritation or whatever. But then the son took it seriously. He said, father, now you have given me your word. So you have to give me to Yama. And it is described in the Kathopanishad that after that, the father had to perform some rituals and Nachiketa could physically go to the Yama Loka or the the plane of Lord of Death. And in fact, he Lord of Death was not available there for 3 days and three nights, it's described there. And this little boy sits there and waits for him. And in the meantime, he watches the scene in the heavens, or in the heavenly plane of existence. And there he sees there is no hunger, there is no thirst, there is no sorrow, there is no misery. All these observations he makes in those 3 days of stay in that, you know, Swargaloka or Yamaloka. And after 3 days, Lord Yama arrives there, sees this little boy there, and he's so happy by, you know, first of all, to reach there itself is extraordinary. And he has waited for him, and he feels that, you know, I have made a little boy wait at my doorstep, so I owe him something. So the Lord of Death or Yama says, you ask for three boons for the 3 nights and days that you have spent. So then Nachiketa asks his first boon. He says, Lord, when I go back to my father, that is, first of all, he ensured that he will go back to his father.
Yes.
From the Lord of Death. So he said, when I go back to my father, he should not be perturbed. His mind should be calm and equanimous, and he should happily accept me back. The second wish that I want to ask is, I see that in the heavens, there is no concept of hunger, thirst, pain, suffering, misery, nothing. Is it possible to give this formula of, you know, the heavenly state to the human beings? How can the ordinary human beings who are having so many sufferings in their lives, can they achieve this state at all? Please teach me this methodology. Lord Yama, Swami describes in Upanishad Vahini, when he writes about Kathopanishad, he says that Lord Yama taught him a special yajna, which he named after Nachiketa. It's called the Nachiketa Yaga or Nachiketa Agni, as Swami describes. And he taught the procedure and said, you teach this to the mankind, and they will, you know, by performing this sacrifice, they will also attain such a heavenly state. And the third boon, when it was conferred on him, we see that the first two boons are also quite selfless. He's asking for his father's peace of mind, and then for the welfare of the entire humanity. So the master is very pleased, that is Lord Yama. And he offers Nachiketa the third boon. And Nachiketa says, Lord, I want to know, what is the secret of life and death? What is the secret of death? Basically, he was asking about this Brahmananda or Brahmajnana. What is the secret of Brahmajnana? I want to know. So the master wanted to test his disciples and his credentials. So what Yama does is, he dissuades him completely. He says, see, you don't ask for such thing. You are a boy of tender age. Why do you bother about all these things? You know, instead, I will give you all the riches in the world.
Yes.
I will give you all the entertainment that you need. I will send all the Gandharvas to entertain you. You can be the lord of the entire earth. Why don't you take all these? Why do you bother about such things? Then Nachiketa says, Lord, I have understood even at this tender age that it is not the objects of pleasure that we enjoy, but actually they enjoy us.
They enjoy us.
Because every time we indulge in a sense pleasure, we lose energy. They don't lose energy.
Correct. They become even more stronger.
For example, you watch a movie, and actually after watching 3 hours of movie, you feel tired.
Yes.
Right? Which means what? The energy has been sucked out of you in some way or the other. Yes. Right? So he said that. He said, the sense objects are not enjoyed by us. In fact, they enjoy us. They drink our energy. So I'm not interested in all these things. You give me what I'm asking for. So Yama was quite, you know, surprised at the determination of this young boy. Then he further tried to dissuade him, and he says, see, it is such a high thing that even devatas cannot, you know, grasp this concept of Brahmajnana. In fact, there is no guru who can easily explain such concepts of Brahmajnana. Then Nachiketa says, now you have made my determination even more strong.
Stronger.
Because where will I find such a guru as yourself?
Correct.
Because Yama is Dharmaraja. He has the highest wisdom in him. He said, where can I find a guru such as yourself? And Swami describes that after this, the disciple having passed the test, Yama starts off with, you know, first praising Nachiketa, saying that you have chosen Shreyas over prayers.
Wow.
Wow.
In fact, this comes to the point where we see, why do we not express or experience this ananda? Simply because we are completely lost in pleasures.
Yes.
Pleasures are very, very temporary in nature, and that is what is called in the Vedantic terms as prayas.
Prayas.
While Brahmananda or the ultimate bliss can be achieved only through shreyas.
Yes.
And Swami gives an analogy to understand shreyas and prayas. He says, suppose you have a sugar candy in hand and you put it into your mouth. You experience the sweetness for some time, but it melts away into your mouth. After some time, if you want to experience continued sweetness, you have to pop in one more sugar candy into your mouth. If you want to experience perennial sweetness, you will have to keep eating sugar candies, and you will become diabetic after that, and that very sugar candy becomes a poison to you.
Correct.
That is the nature of sense pleasures or pleasures of the world,
wow,
which are temporary. While the path of shreyas is like this, then Swami describes, suppose you have fever, the medicine that is given to you is bitter in nature initially, but that bitter medicine, if you are able to accept it,
correct,
you know, it relieves you of the disease of that, you know, of the fever completely. In a similar way, if you follow the path of shreyas, because you're so used to the pleasures of the world, initially it might feel little bitter,
yes,
but then that bitterness will ensure that the disease of samsara is completely eliminated, and Brahmananda, which is your natural state, becomes apparent to us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the beautiful story of Nachiketas and shreyas and prayas which Swami narrates to tell us how we need to choose the permanent or Brahmananda over the temporary ephemeral, which is not even Manushyananda.
Correct, correct. So I mean, it boils down to recognizing that ignorance.
Absolutely.
In fact, I'm reminded of Srimati Padma Kasturi Garu.
Uh-huh.
Professor Kasturi sir's daughter. Now, when she was 20 years, she had this, like many young girls, she had this dream and aspirations of a beautiful married life, you uh-huh. know. But as years moved on, you know, there were a lot of problems in her life. And she realized that all her dreams were shattered. I mean, she was not really experiencing all that she had dreamt of. It is opposite of what she had always envisaged as a young girl. And so one day she was crying. You know, what has happened to my life? So much. It is so different than what I had thought it will be like. And she saw that she's crying, but Swami is smiling. Swami is smiling. And she became very upset. And she thought Swami is teasing her. So she said, Swami, I mean, she had access to Swami, you know, in those days, in the 50s and 60s. She said, Swami, after all, these things don't affect you. For you, it is nothing. You know, ultimately, we are the one who suffer. You seem to actually enjoy our sufferings. We are happily smiling. Then Swami said, Padma, it is not like that. You please be confident that when I laugh, there will be good for you in the future. And then Swami goes on to say, see, do you know why I am laughing? I am laughing at your ignorance, Padma. Because you are imagining that this suffering will last forever. You are imagining that this suffering is permanent, that your life is this suffering, but that is not true. This is only your ignorance. I am laughing only at your ignorance. This suffering will go and you are sure going to be happy. You will understand that. But only later.
Beautiful.
So, I mean, this is one instance where I saw Swami so clearly telling us that, you know, all that we are suffering, it is just because of this ignorance.
Absolutely. In fact, Swami has not minced words in making this point very, very clear to all of us that it is really this ignorance that, you know, plays with us all the time and doesn't allow us to reveal to us what is apparent, which is our own nature, which is Brahmananda. And Swami has given many examples of this ignorance. In fact, there is a very subtle message from a Chinnakatha which Swami gives, which is, one should not take the story in a very emotional way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because this is of Vedantic nature. So one should not look at it in an emotional way, but in a very practical way. Swami says that there was once a Guruji who had a disciple, and he saw that everything in his disciple was going on fine, except for the fact that he had deep attachment to his brother. So this Guru wanted to, you know, he knew that such kind of attachment is not going to have a very good result, because once he loses his brother physically, he is not going to be in a position to hold himself up. So he wanted him to be strong, so he always taught him that, you know, recognize the truth that you are not this body and you are not this mind. And this disciple would listen to it, but it never made any difference to him in terms of his practical life. So one day it so happened that, as predicted, his brother passed away. So his body was there. And Swami says that this Guruji follows the disciple. The disciple was completely heartbroken. And he goes there and he looks at his brother and he's weeping. And the Guruji slowly enters behind him and takes him, comforts him first. And once he is in a better situation, the Guruji very casually, with all love and compassion, asks, why are you crying? So then he says, my brother is gone, he has left me. So his brother's body was right in front of him, and he said, then who is this?
Guruji asks.
Guruji asks his disciple, who is this? He says, this is my brother. Then Guruji says, if he is here, then why are you crying?
You said he's not there.
He's gone. Now when I ask, who is this? You are saying, this is your brother. If he is here, why are you crying? And then something dawned into this disciple, a kind of an insight or revelation from within. And he started understanding what the Guru is saying. And he said, no Guruji, it is actually something which was in this body, which was my brother, which was so lively, whom I enjoyed having such a wonderful relationship with. But today, that something is missing. And Guruji then said, see, that something which you are referring to was never born, so it can never have a death. So he can never leave you.
So that thing which was energizing the body of your brother, that is not dead.
That is never born. How can it die?
Yes.
What you're looking at here is only a play of five elements. So it comes, it has grown with five elements, it's merging back in five elements. So in a sense, even body does not have death in a sense, because it was born from the five elements, it's nourished by the five elements, it goes back to the five elements. It's only a transformation of the five elements, but we cannot call it that. There is no elimination in a way, in a sense. So Swami gives this very powerful example. After hearing this story, I have personally in my own life witnessed the passing away of very, very close relatives. My own grandparents, whom I love tremendously. But somehow it is this inner strength which Swami has given, that when I looked at them, at the physical frames which were lying there, it is impossible actually to think of these stories at such points.
Correct.
But it is His grace, it is the grace of Sadguru who makes it apparent at the right time to you, so that you understand what really is the truth. And when I saw, I knew for sure that they have actually not left me. They cannot leave me and go.
Correct.
And that is the conviction. But then this led me to one question which I ask myself and I ask every student in my awareness class. That is, having told this story and having, you know, thought about this experience, if anybody has experienced death of, you know, near and dear ones, or if you've seen death at any level, you know that that person was moving around, you were referring to him as, you know, so and so and all that. But the day something happens, something goes missing from the body, that's it. You immediately take the body and cremate it, or you bury it, or whatever needs to be done is done. The question is, if that person is obviously not that body anymore, what was he before? If this question is real, a greater question that comes to my mind is, one day this body of mine will also become horizontal.
Yes.
Permanently horizontal. That time, you will not recognize me as that body, because you are going to take it and cremate it. hopefully people won't do it when I'm alive. Right? So, people don't look at me as that body when I am out of it. If I am out of the body then, for some reason, if I use that phrase, out of the body, then who am I right now? Swami says, this is the greatest ignorance which we don't pay attention to. And it is this ignorance that is the root of all other miseries in life.
Correct. Or, and to put it little simply, the identification of ourselves with our body and our mind.
Yeah, in fact, in this discourse, Swami says that.
Yes.
He says, ego is the root cause, and Swami defines ego as identification with the body and mind.
Yeah, Swami very clearly says that is what, only when you eliminate that I, Swami says, can you really experience ananda. One becomes truly and genuinely oneself when this I does not intrude, Swami says. I sets one apart and establishes dvaita. No I brings together and establishes unity, one without a second, and that is advaita. The I sense arises, persists and disappears. Swami says, it is kshara, it is liable to deteriorate. One without a second is akshara. So the guru who is ever in this consciousness has Brahmananda, Swami says.
Absolutely.
The guru has no difference, basically.
In fact, once in an interaction with Bhagwan, I had asked Swami this question. I said, Swami, this ego is a big problem, Swami. Ego, that is identification with body and mind, which is the root ignorance, cause of all miseries and sufferings in life. So then Swami said, you know, his face lit up and his eyebrows went up. And Swami said, oh no, no, chala pedda problem.
Really a big problem.
It's really a very big problem. And then Swami said, Kani, chala sulabham, to remove it is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, Chudu, if you ask somebody, what is your name, he will tell, I am Ramappa. If you ask somebody else, he will tell, I am Krishnappa. Somebody else will say, I am Shivappa. So, though while they are referring to the names that is conferred on their physical forms, but all of them are saying, I am, I am, I am. Swami said that I is common in all. Common in the sense there is only one I. There are not many I's. There is only one I. Having said this, Swami told me that, Chudu, keep telling yourself, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. That is that I, Aham means that I,
yes,
is Brahman. That I is Brahman. That which I refer to as I is Brahman itself, which is God, which is Brahmananda. So tell yourself, keep repeating to yourself, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. I am God, I am God, I am God. You will be God. God will have no ego. This is what Swami said.
Well, in fact, Giridhar, as you narrate this, I am also reminded of my student days in the college when many times by speaking to us, Swami would say that only thing you need to practice is just tell yourself, I am God. Sometimes he would say, you should say that I am not animal, I am man.
Yeah.
And then say, I am not man, I am God.
I am not just man.
I am not just man,
I am God.
God.
Yes.
Swami said, if you just practice this, and at that point in time, I used to think, you know, what is this? Bhagavan is not giving us a mantra, you know, someone will tell, okay, chant Om Namo Narayanaya, or chant Gayatri, this one. But here, Swami said, no, just tell, I am God.
In fact, Vishu, you have raised a very beautiful point. Every word of Sadguru is a mantra. And where we started off this whole discussion with is the quality of disciple which will ensure the highest grace of Sadguru, which leads to self-realization, is of implicit obedience to the word of Sadguru.
Yes.
If Sadguru says, sweep the floor every day, that is the mantra.
Yes.
That's all. In fact, the disciple doesn't have to do anything else. Padmapada is the best example for that.
Yes.
He served Shankaracharya as per his instructions.
Correct.
He used to wash the clothes of all disciples, take care of cooking the food, and all the sundry he did. While all other disciples of Shankaracharya were dwelling on the highest aspects of Vedanta and Upanishads and all that. And when everybody was wondering, why is this person wasting his time in doing all these,
chores of the ashram.
Yeah, chores of the ashram and doing daily works alone, but not focusing on the Vedanta and Upanishad, when such a master as Shankara himself is there, next to him. And Shankara wanted to show why it is important to have implicit obedience to the word of Sadguru, which is the most important thing. It's not really to get a mantra or anything else. It is the implicit obedience to the Lord, command of the Lord. And to prove this, one day Shankaracharya stood on the other bank of a river and Padmapada was on the opposite bank. And he simply just called out to Padmapada and said, come here immediately. Padmapada did not even think. He just ran across the river. And it is said that lotuses sprung below his feet wherever he was running. And that is why this name of Padmapada was conferred onto him. And then Shankaracharya, that is Sadguru in the form of Shankaracharya, in an instant gave him the highest knowledge of Brahma Vidya.
Wow.
So what really is a requisite for a disciple of Sadguru is implicit obedience to the word of the master of Sadguru. And every word of Sadguru is the highest mantra.
Wow. Fantastic. And we started this discussion with faith, you know. We said the ignorance is because we do not have the faith in its truest sense. And once we have faith, when can we say, if we say we have faith, then we have to be absolutely obedient. And I think as devotees, if we call ourselves devotees, if we call ourselves followers, disciples, whatever we may call ourselves, perhaps if we regard Bhagwan as the Sadguru, as the one who is going to take us across this ocean of samsara, then, as you mentioned, with faith, we have to learn to take at least one teaching and start practicing in our lives.
Yeah, sincerity and implicit obedience, Swami says, are the two things which can really make us experience not only the presence of Sadguru, but in fact achieve the highest grace that only Sadguru is capable of conferring.
And perhaps there is no need for us to dwell on all these Advaita philosophies. There is no need, as you gave that beautiful example. One doesn't have to really read, one doesn't really have to go to a great master, nothing is needed.
What is required is implicit obedience to the word of Sadguru, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai.
Wow, wonderful. Well, I think the time is running out and you have engagements in the college, so we will stop here. And we have just dwelt on the first word, Brahmananda.
Yes, absolutely. we have not even touched the tip of the iceberg.
Iceberg. Yes, but I think by Swami's grace, we'll try and continue this in the coming sessions of Outside Inside, Deep Inside, till Guru Purnima and probably even beyond, because it's such an interesting, it's such a revealing discussion, and every time you think about these things, it just elevates you. So, thank you very much, Giridhar, for taking your time out and sharing these beautiful insights. Probably we'll end with the same shloka, this time rendered by our own students in Bhagavan's presence.
Wonderful.
So let us listen to that. It starts with Sai Gayatri and then moves on to this shloka. And perhaps we immerse ourselves in that feeling of being in the presence of the Sadguru.
Jnana Murtim सदृशं तत्त्वमस्याधिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यं विमलमचरम् सर्वधि साक्षीभूतम् भावातीतम् त्रिगुणरहितम् साईनाथाय नमो नमः.
So that was the rendering by the students of Bhagwan. And as we ruminate on this powerful verse, dear listeners, there is so much for us to think about it. So let us spend some time in contemplation on the powerful words, on the powerful expressions in this hymn, and we'll continue this discussion same time next week for another episode, or rather a series of episodes of Outside Inside, Deep Inside. If you have any queries, any comments, any suggestions, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. And as we draw the curtains on this last segment of Thursday Live, I, on behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, place our deep sense of gratitude to Bhagwan. We are beholden to him for having given us this yet another beautiful Thursday to dwell on his message, to ruminate on his glory, and to share his love. And thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us all the day through. So till we meet next time, a sweet goodbye and loving salam from Prashant Nilayam.